Numbers 31, we're reading here about the victory of Israel over Midian. And let's just back up a bit. Balaam had been told to go and curse Israel, and he really wanted to do that, but God kept stopping him. And then it seems he came up with the idea, terrible idea, that if he could get Israel to sin, then God would curse them. And so what he did, he got eventually a load of Midianite women to go to the Israelites and to encourage them to come and worship Baal, their Baal, and to commit various kinds of sexual immorality with them. And of course, God was angry, and God did curse Israel in that sense. And here in Numbers 31, God says, "Avenge the children of Israel on the Midianites." This is what Moses was to do. And yet we also read, verse 3, of avenging Yahweh. Yahweh took vengeance. They were to avenge what he did against, what the Midianites had done against Yahweh, against God. So you see there that what is done against God is also done against his people. It's taught there in the parable when Jesus will say, "When I was hungry, you didn't feed me. When I was thirsty, you didn't give me anything to drink." And the rejected will say, "But when, Jesus, did we see you hungry or thirsty?" And Jesus will say, "What you did or didn't do to the least of these, my brethren, so you did to me." So I think the point is that, sure, the day for vengeance for what is done to God's people, including leading them into sin in this case, is going to be taken. It will come. Vengeance will come, but vengeance is mine. God says, "I will repay." There is a great feeling when people do wrong to us that I want to take vengeance, that I want to see justice done. This is people walk out of courtrooms claiming that they are relieved that justice has been done to the person who they feel wronged them or abused them or whatever. And yet in the end, nothing has changed. In the end, what was done was done. And I think, therefore, that we are not to take vengeance ourselves, because it's not actually very effective and it doesn't ultimately solve the issues. Leave God to take the vengeance for us at his time, which may not be in this life. So they go and they fight with the Midianites, and God gives them this great victory. Now, they were still to the east of Jordan, of the River Jordan. They hadn't crossed the Jordan and entered into Canaan proper. And they were told to burn, verse 10, all the cities and their encampments, to burn them with fire, to totally raze them to the ground. And yet, that's very different to the idea that when they entered Canaan, they would live in houses which they had not built. That's what it says in Joshua 24, that they were given an inheritance of houses which they had not built, wells which they had not dug. So the idea was that in Canaan, they were to take over the properties of the Canaanites. But here on the east of Jordan, they're told to burn all this stuff with fire. So you can see it was God's intention, clearly, that they should inherit to the west of Jordan and inherit these properties that they had not built, etc. And yet, the 2.5 tribes come to Moses and say, "We don't want to go into Canaan proper, we want to inherit here, east of Jordan." Well, they should have figured that this was not at all God's ideal intention, and indeed it wasn't, and yet God gave in to them. And I just mention that because it shows that in the end, God will give you that which you desire in its essence. Just like the father gave the prodigal son what the boy desired, even though he surely knew that the boy was going to misuse it. I don't mean that if, I want an expensive car, pray to God, open my eyes, and there it is. No, I don't mean that. I mean that in essence you are given that which you desire. And the important thing, therefore, is to desire the right thing, to have a heart for God, a heart that seeks above all things to do his work, his will, to be especially above all things, according to the character of his Son, the Lord Jesus. If that is your passionate desire, then God, in essence, will grant it to you. Well, they won this great victory, but they save the women alive. And Moses is angry, verse 14, with the officers of the army, and he says, why did you save the women alive? Well, they could say, well, we weren't told not to. Sure, they weren't told specifically, but you could sort of expect them to figure that, look, it was these women of Midian who led us astray and caused thousands of deaths and caused God to, in that sense, curse us. Of course, we should get rid of them. And so there are times when there is no specific commandment, but you can say that, as Dennis Gillett used to say, sanctified common sense should play a role. And again, it comes down to the spirit rather than the letter. If you're going all the time by the letter of the law, that, oh, God said this, so I shall do it, but he didn't say I shouldn't do that, so I don't. Yeah, that's good, I can do that. He didn't say I shouldn't. Well, you've missed the point. And it's the same here. They weren't told they had to kill all these women. But it was pretty obvious that it was these women that had led them astray. So if they were killing all the men, they should kill the women as well. And yet, as he said, it was these, verse 16, who caused the children of Israel, through the advice of Balaam, to sin against Yahweh. And so the plague was upon the congregation of Yahweh, saying, look, can't you figure the principle? Don't you see what God's intention is? And there's a lot of things like that in life where, sure, we are not specifically told you should do this or you should not do that, but we are certainly left to figure it out. In verse 18, he makes a concession, but all the girls who have not known man by lying with him, that's the younger girls, virgins, you can keep alive for yourselves, but in camp outside of the camp 7 days, whoever's killed anyone or touched any slain must purify yourselves on the third day and on the seventh day, you and your captives, which would have included these girls. So they were not to sleep with these girls immediately. They were not being given the usual sort of right of the warrior in those days to sleep with the captured girls. Not at all. God's very careful about that, that that should not be the case, that in the flush of victory they were to not see these women as their sexual trophies, but they were to marry them in a proper way. So it's a concession to weakness on one hand, and yet also very sort of guarded lest it go too far. So God does make concessions to human weakness. He knew that they wanted to have some sort of trophy to show that they'd won, you know, because they had to burn the cities and etc. And they wanted some sort of trophy that was understandable in the terms in which they lived, which was usually that the warrior takes the women. So I think you see there how God is sensitive. He does make concessions all the time to human weakness. It's just that if you keep using them, you end up missing the point. And the fact that God makes concessions to human weakness, as he does all the time, does not mean that we should get into a mentality of what can I get away with? What's the minimum I can do? We shouldn't be minimalists in service of God. Instead, you should use, and I think that's the lesson here, sanctified common sense to think, oh, what's God's real intention here? What's God's maximum? What's the maximum I could do? I shall try to do it. And where did I fail? Okay, God does cut slack. He definitely does. And yet I am not going to abuse that.